drive-through HR. It is a Monday. It is going to be a wonderful week. And it is sunny outside, which I absolutely love. I wish we could have this weather all year round, like, you know, San Diego, let's say, as a for example. But we don't. Anyhow, so we have a wonderful guest, and actually just kind of can't wait to kind of hear him tell us about his world and what's going on. So, Stephen, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, and by the way, I live in basically North San Diego, so I have that weather all the time.
I've always hated you. I've always no, I'm just kidding. San Diego is perfect. I mean, California real estate aside, San Diego is perfect. It really is. It's just beautiful. We went over, my wife and I went years ago when we lived in Tucson, and went over to their dog beach. And I'm like, you know, this is how it should be done. This place right here.
But doesn't it kind of piss you off a little bit that the dogs have it so good?
You know, I think what was fascinating, we had a little bit of kind of a Cocker Spaniel mix. And what was fascinating is just to watch dogs around other dogs. Like, that was just fascinating to me. People would just take their dogs off the leash, you know, sit down, and the dogs would all roam around in packs. And somebody's throwing a ball out in the water, and 40 dogs are going after the ball. It's like, you know what? They're happy. They're happy just being around other dogs. They don't even, you know, you humans, go get a hot dog. You're good. We'll be right here. We're comfortable right here around other dogs. Like, there wasn't fights, or there wasn't the stuff that you would think.
No,
that was
no
right
politics,
there.
Right?
No,
none of the dogs were trying to suck in their stomach to look better on the beach.
No, there's none of that. Just dogs. Like, hey, let's hang out. You going over there? Yeah, great. I'll go with you. So, do us a favor and introduce yourself. Kind of let the audience know a little bit of your pertinence.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Steve Parker. I am a lifelong HR practitioner. I have spent, when I got out of the military, actually, was in special operations in the military, which is perfect training for HR. When I got out of the military, I spent my time as a recruiter, an HR generalist, a business partner. I've led just about all the different functions in HR, and I'm really passionate about the side of HR that helps people actually perform better, do their jobs better, be more successful. About 5 years ago, I got into HR technology, and I have a fancy title that I've held since then called the Head of Business Transformation. And now I work at a company that I'm actually really proud to say I work for, called Achievers, where business transformation actually means helping change the way the world works. Our role with our customers is to help them engage, align, and recognize people. My role specifically with them is to tie strategies and processes to the technology that's going to help them do that.
So what's top of mind for your clients? Like, when you get to, you know, because you work both sides, right, you get to interact with a bunch of HR practitioners now, but just from a different vantage point. What's keeping them up at night?
Yeah, that nebulous word, engagement. It's so funny, though. It means so many different things to so many different people that I talk to. And actually, disengagement's what's keeping them up at night, because they see it show up in so many different ways, whether it's, you know, people aren't showing up to work, or they're leaving, or they're here, but, you know, to use a term from the logging community, they're dead wood. Whatever that may be, most companies are trying to do more with less these days. We kind of learned that nasty little trick in the recession. We could, you know, lay off a bunch of people and still have the same goals and targets. So now we're trying to do more with less, and we're worried about trying to get as much productivity out of people as we can. And all the stats and figures are telling us we're not doing a good job at that.
What's the goal of engagement? Like, what are we trying to do in engagement, or is it a step along the way to something else?
Yeah, you know, I think it is, right? I think if business executives figured out that you could bop people over the head with baseball bats to make them more productive, that's what we'd be focused on. Fortunately, no science has come through with kind of that answer. What we've learned is that engaged employees who are willing to spend their discretionary effort on the things that the company wants them to spend it on actually drive better customer loyalty, better productivity, better stakeholder returns as a result. So that's why it's such a big topic, but it's so misunderstood because, frankly, we all spend a lot of time and energy and probably a bunch of money measuring it, but nobody really knows what to do to make it happen after they've measured it. So I talked to a bunch of HR practitioners who are like, well, it's pretty obvious my company has some pockets of disengagement, and the, you know, standard action plan, put it on a shelf and actually go work on other things that are higher priority kind of tactics don't work anymore.
So do we want for engagement from all employees, or do we want engagement from our high performers? And let me kind of throw in a caveat there. A lot of people believe that 80% of a value comes from 20% of the workforce. And again, that might or might not be true, but I'd love to get your take on that. But so the original question was, you know, are we really trying to engage every single employee, or are we really kind of targeting, or should we target kind of the higher performers in our organization?
So I'm going to be a little bit controversial probably with this comment, but I think it's everybody. I don't buy into the shtick that, you know, the 80-20 rule works for a lot of things. I don't think it works for our people, because then you could just fire 80% of your workforce and supposedly keep the lights on, right? So I don't think it works that way with people. I think, you know, when you have these initiatives like your HIPO initiatives and your just spending money on 10 or 20% of the workforce, I think we're doing that because of scale and a little bit because we're lazy, because we don't have the ability to do those things for everybody. We'd actually like to make everybody perform better. But typically, because of lack of resources or because I can't get leaders behind it, we'll dial into just the top 10% and say we'll make them better. You actually have much more runway to make your poor performers better performers than you do to make your high performers higher performers, right? Because ultimately there's a ceiling of performance. So you could make the argument that if they're high performers and they're really high performers, they're probably already engaged. It's your low performers who have a lot more untapped potential. So my mission has been to basically take the entire bell curve of performance for people's organization and shift it over to the right. And I checked, by the way, I'm doing it in the air. You can't see because we're on the radio, but right is better in this instance. I'm
absolutely
after that, I promise.
Well, Stephen, while we were talking about, you know, engagement, the question that can drive us into different directions is, who really owns engagement, right? So what do you think from your perspective when you are helping out your clients and they are asking you some measurement and metrics and tips and techniques, what is the basic? Who really owns engagement?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I love that question because typically we try to put things into functions so that we can delegate them to the right people and make sure there are people on it. But engagement is something that I think is owned really by every person in the organization. And I really mean that sincerely. So, you know, it's managers and executives' jobs to align people around the right work. That's a huge driver of engagement. It's employees' jobs to actually be willing to, you know, spend the discretionary effort that they have on the organization. It's HR's job to help facilitate managers and executives creating the type of culture that drives employee engagement. I think it's something, and that's why it's probably nebulous. I love Inigo Montoya from The Princess Bride. At some point, his leader, his evil leader in his evil clan, is saying the word inconceivable so many times that finally he stops while he's climbing this cliff and says, that word, I do not think it means what you think it means. That's kind of the way I feel about engagement in organizations. Because everybody owns it, unfortunately, nobody is taking ownership of it. And it means a lot of different things to people, which means that we spend more time debating what it is than what to do about it.
That's true. And you told us that you were a head of business transformation, right? And when we are talking about engagement, and especially people, they are part of the business. So how do we actually transform this employee engagement aspect of it? Because mainly when we see that most of them fail when they initiate this employee engagement practices or best practices of what they call, but ultimately they won't see the results. So what can be the reasons for the failure of the good practices that they call as employee engagement? Or is it just going to be a jargon?
You know, for the most part, unfortunately, it is these days. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of, again, I'll be controversial, I think there's a lot of consultant money to be made off of having a sort of nebulous definition of employee engagement, because then, you know, I could charge you a whole bunch of money to spend the next year actually defining what you should do for your organization, and a whole bunch more money every other year after that, trying to, quote-unquote, help you do those things. So, you know, it's been nebulous for a while, but I'll tell you, it's actually, when you take a look at the science, it's very clear what drives engagement in organizations. The number one thing is recognition, especially nowadays. Millennials coming out of school, we actually survey them every year as they come out of school. In 2014, 79% of the graduates said they expect immediate feedback on their work, not that they want, but they expect it. And that makes sense, right? Because when they go out to dinner, they expect feedback from places like Yelp or OpenTable to be able to tell them where to go. When they're buying something on Amazon or even, you know, places like Target.com, et cetera, they get immediate feedback on what products are better than others. So they expect immediate feedback in the workplace. Recognition, catching people doing things right, is the number one driver of engagement. The second biggest driver of engagement is alignment. So it's not enough to say, hey, you're doing the right thing, but we have to help people understand how those things contribute to our organizational success and help them believe that they are working on the stuff that matters and that they're not spending effort on stuff that doesn't matter, because nobody likes that, right? So those two things are actually the most important things to focus on. So in my job as the head of business transformation at Achievers, those are the two things that I really help organizations do to drive that culture of engagement.
So take us into the world of recognition, as you know, because everyone's got kind of a snapshot of recognition going back, you know, 30 years in the service awards and probably doing more contemporary things, you know, today. But just, if you don't mind, kind of give us the update. Here's kind of what's going on. Here's some of the movement subplots of what's going on in recognition today.
Yeah, I'll paraphrase a line from. You're starting to get a sense of the movies I like to watch through this conversation. So first Princess Bride, now Monty Python's Holy Grail. I'll paraphrase a line, you know, watery tarts lying in ponds distributing gold watches doesn't create a culture of recognition. So, you know, there are so many things wrong with the way we've been approaching recognition, from the fact that, you know, starting with service awards, we're giving away things that people really don't care too much about. We're doing it every 5 or 10 years, so we're recognizing presence versus performance. So many things wrong with recognition from that perspective. Recognition really isn't about stuff anymore, right? There's intrinsic and there's extrinsic motivator. Intrinsic motivation is really the strongest tie to engagement. So it's not about distributing goods and services. And a lot of recognition companies actually make their money when you purchase their goods and services, that $700 iPad that you could have got at the Apple store for $300 through their website. What recognition really is about connecting people to other people in the organization and helping them recognize when people have done an amazing thing. And those amazing things actually, especially in great organizations, happen all day long in great organizations. And making those things visible actually allows other people to repeat those things, so what gets recognized gets repeated. And it also helps other people sort of drive around what's supposed to be important for the company. They see what other people are getting recognized for, and they say, oh, that's the work that I'm supposed to be doing. So, you know, building a culture of recognition has a lot more to do with connecting people socially around the work that they're doing and giving them the opportunity to recognize each other than it does about distributing gold watches every 5 years.
So the next question is about generations. A lot of the myths and anecdotes and probably some facts in there around, you know, how certain clusters of people like to be recognized versus others. What's the real story here? So what do y'all really see as it relates to recognition and generations?
Yeah, right. So there's the myth that the baby boomers are actually really stoked about the lapel pins that they get every 5 years, right? But it's the millennials who are changing it. I think that's a huge myth. I think, you know, what I think what we talked about in terms of tapping into intrinsic motivation is true for everybody. I think, you know, when you talk about recognizing folks, I think getting a job well done, a specific sort of comment around a job well done on a daily basis from your peers, from your managers, I think everybody likes that, right? I get clients who actually ask me the converse every once in a while. They say, well, if everybody's saying thank you and calling out great work in the organization, won't that water it down? Absolutely not, right? I've never, ever heard somebody come up to me and go, man, I had a really bad day at work today. Five people said thank you for that work that I put out, and I know I suck, so I'm really conflicted. I've never heard anybody say that, right? Hopefully that's never happened to you guys, by the way. Gosh, I know I suck, but people keep saying thank you. I don't know what to do. The reality is, it's not like, you know, one group likes stuff and one group doesn't. You know, it's more about getting smart around the way we're able to deliver these the thank yous, the pats on the back for something great. I think we have technology now that helps us do it in a way that we weren't able to do it before. And that's why people kind of confuse it with a generational issue, right? I think what is true of generations is that the millennials, for example, and some of us Gen Xers have actually grown up in technology such that we know there is a better way to make recognition more visible and to help create alignment and drive engagement, because we do it in our consumer lives. Right. So Jack Dorsey from Twitter actually talks about usage is the best leading indicator of value. And so we are used to using technologies to connect with each other in a way that is sort of voluminous and continuous. And hopefully if you're playing blackout bingo at home, you just kind of with buzzwords, you just kind of grabbed two of them. I said voluminous. What was the other one I said? Continuous. OK. Voluminous is the better one. But anyway. We're used to using that technology, right? And baby boomers are sort of unfortunately used to getting less than that, right? So when we talk about generational differences, it's not because the generations want something different. It's because they expect something different, because unfortunately we've treated, as consumers, we've treated the baby boomer and the generations before in sort of a less connected way than we have the current generations. Does that make sense? Yes, do you guys believe that?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we definitely. And that makes really sense when we talk about, you know, making a generational sort of recognition platform, so that it makes really sense for the people that we are giving that recognition to, right? So from an organization point of view, do you get asked this question, like, how do we make a results-based recognition platform? Because they ultimately want the results, right? It's not just giving away some recognition or giving away some gifts or benefits. No, business wants results out of it. So do you particularly suggest any particular tips and techniques to your clients when it comes to making a results-based recognition platform?
Yeah. The number one thing is adoption is value, like I mentioned. So you want as many people on the platform recognizing each other as possible. I talked about tapping into intrinsic motivation. Extrinsic motivation is still a thing. So you don't want to go, you know, 100% sort of social, intrinsically focused recognition. You do want to allow for the opportunity to provide meaningful rewards occasionally when sort of the opportunity merits it. But you want those rewards to be, like I said, meaningful for the folks who use them. So that means tapping into what's important to them and allowing them to sort of personalize them. For example, we use our own recognition platform at Achievers. We had an employee who is really interested in yoga, and she used her rewards. She had been accumulating points for doing all kinds of great things in our organization. She used her rewards to travel to Bali and study with a yogi. Every time she thinks about that experience, she's going to think about the fact that Achievers enabled that experience. She's much less likely to leave our organization. She's much more likely to give us her discretionary effort in the things that she does, because she knows that we're more likely to give her an enriching life experience and not just some gold watch that sits on a shelf in her closet. So those things are probably the most important things to, you know, really driving culture of recognition. And then, like I mentioned, alignment is critically important to making sure you see the results from it. So it's not just enough to be engaged, but you got to be engaged in doing the right things for the organization. So that it goes back to that adoption. That adoption creates visibility. When a bunch of people are using the platform, people start to see the things that are popping out of, you know, the news feeds, et cetera. They start to see things, the things that are important to the organization, and understand that those are the things that they should be working on as well. And that drives the direction of the organization. So those are probably the top drivers of really creating a recognition program that drives results. And we've seen some incredible results. We actually measure it with our customers for free. We've seen some incredible results. We had a grocery store chain actually do an experiment with us in March. They called it their March Madness campaign. We took two stores and we said, okay, we're going to create a communication campaign that actually really excites folks in those two stores to deliver even more recognition than the rest of the stores are doing. And we measured the results, and those two stores in 1 month's time had $2 million of additional revenue as a result of, you know, more frequent, more visible recognition driving engagement. So there's really a direct connection to return on investment for our customers. But now it's starting to sound like a commercial. And I really want to avoid that. You can tell I'm passionate about this space. And, you know, I encourage folks to kind of dig in because it's all about the science, right? I like to say I joined human resources because I like people, and if it weren't for the people, our jobs would be a lot easier. But there's a science around human behavior. And I think it's about time that we started focusing not just on driving, you know, performance from an individual attribute standpoint, like what can we do to make Steve a better communicator or have more business acumen, but start to really measure the environment that we create or don't for our employees to perform in, because it's just as important.
Absolutely. So, in fact, that is a great segue to my next question, and I would guess this question could be the number one question that normally you get asked from the HR practitioner, the ROI of recognition, right? So do you suggest any particular metrics? If so, what are they?
Yeah, I love that question because especially, like, if we level that question up to engagement, you know, that's where people tend to know intuitively, like, I should do something about engagement. But it's so hard for folks to measure ROI on traditionally that typically those initiatives get deprioritized. It's really easy to measure the cost of building a new building and how many extra customers that's going to bring in, et cetera. It's really easy to measure some expected ROI on a new product or service. It's hard to think about the ROI that you'd get if you helped every employee in your organization perform better. So we've done a lot of work to help quantify that for organizations. If you look at the cost of disengagement, it's as much as $550 billion a year. So if you're trying to calculate that in your head, that's about 7 Bill Gates's worth, or if you're cooler and hipper than me, a little bit younger, that's 17 Mark Zuckerbergs. So $550 billion is a lot. That comes out of things like, you know, the fact that disengaged employees make 100 times more errors than engaged employees. They're absent more often, so organizations are spending 36% of their payroll on absenteeism. They leave more often, so you can expect to pay anywhere from 1/5 to 200% of an employee's salary to replace them. And frankly, you know, companies with lower engagement have operating incomes that are as much as 33% lower. So there's a huge cost to not focusing on this. There's a huge opportunity cost. Organizations who do focus on driving a culture of recognition and driving engagement actually see, according to Aon, I believe, every 1% increase in employee engagement leads to 0.6% increase in revenue. So if you want to drive top-line growth, the quickest way to it is by building a culture of recognition.
So what else is recognition tied to the organization? Like, where I think sometimes people think of it as, you know, this thing that happens over off to the side. But from y'all's experience, like, what other, where does that data need to inform the rest of the organization and other decisions that are being made?
Yeah, Say more about that, William, because I'd be interested in
I think a couple of years back there was a whole lot about how recognition and performance are really kissing cousins of one another. And so I think some people got on that bandwagon that basically said, listen, if you're in performance and your performance management system isn't in some way, shape, or form tied to your processes and tied to recognition, well, you've already got something that's broken. And first of all, I kind of like the thought. It seems logical. I'm not sure how many organizations actually do it that way. But it also seems like there's more. Like, what else should it inform?
Yeah, there is more. I think it informs all the work that we do. So it's interesting that people want to label it as performance management. I see people try to push it off as, you know, the reward system 2.0. So it should be with the comp folks because they handle total rewards. It really is an operational thing. You know, recognition impacts all the different HR practices. So whether it's referrals and you want to recognize people to help drive great referrals, whether it's, you know, things like succession planning and you want to recognize people who are doing amazing things to make themselves a bit more capable, et cetera. It really touches all that. But more importantly, when you think about it as an operational program, you're recognizing people for doing the things with your customers that actually drive profit, that drive customer loyalty. And those things may be different for every organization and may be different for different groups within your organization as well. So trying to have, you know, just sort of one view of the behaviors that are important to drive, I think, is where HR often falls down. You know, they say, well, here's the six values. These are the things that everybody has to do. We're going to recognize folks on that. That's a good start. But where I see people really create competitive advantage with recognition are, you know, the healthcare organizations who say, I measured on these 8 HCAP dimensions. I'm going to measure every single person in my organization on these things, and I'm going to create recognition that uses those things as the foundation. Or the retail company who says, these are the 6 behaviors, and, you know, whether it's eye contact and smiling or things as simple as that, that actually drive customer loyalty and customer satisfaction, I'm going to recognize my people around those things. So I think you're starting to see, you know, there's a lot that HR can do to enable this, and then you need a little bit of local flexibility for the business to kind of take control of it and actually start to own those things, because ultimately the reason for recognition is to drive customer loyalty and shareholder value, which is the business's goal. Do you buy that?
That's true. Yes, we do buy that. So, Steve, we have about 2 minutes left at this point. And, in fact, how do we get the buy-in from our executives while doing recognition initiatives in an organization? In a nutshell, probably you can say.
Yeah, it's hard to do in a nutshell, right? Because it depends
I know, right?
on the organization. The good news and the bad news is right now, actually taking action, creating a culture of recognition, driving alignment, and driving engagement is not something that every organization is doing successfully. So that's the good news and bad news. That means right now it can still be a competitive advantage, right? I hate the term best practice because if everybody was doing best practice, it would be same practice. It wouldn't be best practice, right?
Sure.
But when you're actually using recognition and alignment successfully to create a culture of engagement, you actually have a competitive advantage. And competitive advantages come from leaders taking risks. And so whether or not you can have an airtight business case to present to your leader, I think what you're going to find is if your leader is someone who gets it, saying, I know the way that we can create more engagement in our organization and drive better results is really going to go over well. If you have the type of leader who's like, well, show me why that would be better than cutting 15% of our headcount, you're probably barking up the wrong tree, unfortunately, right now. And I wish it weren't that way. I wish it were like, you know, the clouds would open up and all of a sudden everybody would sort of become disciples. But it's kind of fun being in a space where you can still create competitive advantage.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining with us today and sharing your valuable insights with our audience. And so where can they get a hold of you or connect with you and probably your travel plans as well?
Yeah, so I'd love to hear from folks out there. You can follow me on Twitter at Stephen J. Parker. You can find me on LinkedIn. Just look at Parker Stephen J. on LinkedIn. And you can email me directly at stephenp@achievers.com. I encourage you to do so. If you have any questions, or even if you want to debate some of the stuff that I talked about, or want to share information with me, I love learning from folks in the audience as well. And I want to thank you guys for allowing me to come on. I hope we do this again. We can talk about other topics that would lead to more blocks being chosen on our buzzword bingo blackout list. So I'd like to use words like synergy and the war for talent and things like that. So maybe we can have other discussions in the future.
We will.
Sounds
we will
good,
definitely
brother.
Make that happen. Thanks, Steve.
Right,
thanks,
guys.
William. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
You too.
Bye-bye.